Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired in the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 9th, 2015. This is episode 1210. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Next Issue, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free 30-day trial, visit nextissue.com/techguy. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. Hey, there's mine. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Get $10 off the Ring Video Doorbell when you go to ring.com/techguy. And by Prosper. Prosper's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smart watches. I can't do the smartwatch salute because I'm not wearing one today. But we'll talk. I can talk about them. I have them all. Don't wear them. Don't find the need. Saw an article today saying watch sales are off this year, thanks to the Apple Watch. That's the headline. Really? You think that? You think that the Apple Watch is just killing traditional watch sales? I don't think so. I think watch sales probably have been down a lot every year for the last 10 years, thanks to the smartphone. Who needs a smartwatch? I got a smartphone. It's in my pocket. Are you a fan of the Apple Watch? You know, the people I know who are fans of the Apple Watch find a particular use. You know, they found one thing that they need it for, whether it's, you know, to remind them to stand up every hour. Hey, there are people who need that, I guess. Or to keep track of their, I don't know what, heart rate, I guess. The Bloomberg Businessweek reports, Apple helps push U.S. watch sales to biggest drop in 7 years. Really, Apple? You think it was Apple? Retailer, let's see, Apple, U.S. watch sales fell the most in 7 years in June. Retailers sold 375 million watches during the month, 11% less than June of the year before. The largest decline since 2008, which was the year after the iPhone came out. The market for watches that cost less than $1,000 is most at risk. 24% decline in timepieces ranging from $100 to $149. How can you blame Apple for that? Their watch starts at $350, more than twice as much. Oh, wait a minute. Paragraph 4 says, the Apple Watch isn't the only cause of the downturn. Saturation with customers is blamed. Yeah. It's an ice age for watches. I think even Apple is starting to acknowledge that the Apple Watch hasn't really taken the world by storm. But it's not. It's a specialty product. It's not like a smartphone, which everybody can use and wants. And at this point, almost everybody who wants a smartphone has one. I just don't see... Yes, somebody in the chat room. Toy Driver says, I have not worn a watch since the early 90s and see no reason to start now. I agree. And even I, who have these watches on my bedside table, several of them, including traditional quartz timepieces and even wind-up watches, I don't wear them that much. Meanwhile, my good friend Kevin Rose is featured in the New York Times this weekend because he's got a new app called Watchville. It's all about high-end watches. Yeah, that market is not going down. He even says he's going to create an eBay for resale of watches. He says, you just don't know. when you buy a watch for $100,000, you just don't know who owned it before. Has it been polished? That can reduce the price value. It's, he says, when you're an entrepreneur, which Kevin is many times over, you look for areas that are underserved and you go in there with technology and, I guess, high-end watches. He says, maybe next high-end fashion, cars, boats. Are you wearing a watch? Do you think the smart watch is... You know, it could be. It could be. It's very possible that it just hasn't found its voice yet. Tablets. Microsoft introduced tablets 10 years before the iPad came out. In fact, I remember very well, it was, I think, at a CES, might have been a Comdex, which was the long gone trade show in Vegas. Microsoft took over the parking lot and put a house there. It plopped a house down like the Wizard of Oz, boom, in the parking lot. And inside the house, there were actors playing mom, dad, sis, and bro. Yeah, this mom was in the kitchen. Hey, sorry, this was the 2000s, you know. Dad was in the living room watching the game. Sis and bro were upstairs doing their homework, talking to their friends, and they all had tablets. Microsoft said, the era of the tablet is upon us. It's like 2001, 2000, maybe 2000. Yeah, they might have been a little, jumped the gun, because I think, you know, the tablet did take off, but not for 10 years, until 2010 when the iPad came out. And now, 5 years later, I think the tablet might have seen better days. We live in interesting times. The tech cycle moves fast. Meanwhile, Reuters has a story that pocket-sized personal transporters soon could be seen on the streets of Tokyo. The next big thing, perhaps. Everybody's looking for the next big thing. A Japanese engineer has developed a portable transporter small enough to be carried in a backpack. He calls it the world's first car in a bag. It's about the size of a scale, bathroom scale. You step on it, and it rolls. You get off it, it stops rolling. It goes up to 6 miles an hour. It's kind of like, I guess, like a Segway. Which, although that took the world by storm, didn't it? I shouldn't mock. I have one. I don't know. I think this is kind of cool. You stand on it and you just kind of, you lean to steer, and it looks like you're standing on a bathroom scale rolling around at 6 miles an hour. Now, there's a use for your iPad. Put wheels on it. Somebody in the chat room says, people are lazy. Yes. You noticed that, did you? That's true. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Anywhere from the U.S. and Canada. Our website, techguylabs.com. I'll put links to all this stuff there. You can laugh at the people riding around on a bathroom scale. Techguylabs.com. That's the phone number. Or I'm sorry, that's the website. That's free. No sign up needed. We don't need your email. 8888-ASK-LEO. We can talk about all the tech news. Have you downloaded and installed Windows 10? We are 2 weeks now, to a week and a half into the Windows 10 era. I like it. I'm going to go on record. Actually, I'm not alone. All the reviewers seem to like it, too. Not quite done, some say. There'll be a big update in the fall, Microsoft says. And that will make it the final kind of version of Windows 10. Free to upgrade for anybody who has a legit copy, an activated copy of Windows 7 or 8. I highly recommend it if you've been sitting back and waiting. I think we now know it's okay. There's a compatibility checker that Microsoft has before you install, just to make sure you don't have software that's not going to work. Sometimes people are dependent on that. I talked to somebody yesterday who still uses Microsoft Money. The checkbook balancing program from more than 10 years. Microsoft stopped making it 10 years ago. They released one last version they called the Sunset Edition that wouldn't require activation or internet connection or anything, because they figured, well, if you still want to use it, I guess here you go. The Sunset Edition, the nursing home of software. And he said, you know, I've been using it fine right up to Windows 8.1, and now Windows 10, it doesn't work anymore. Well, there does come a time at some point when you just have to say, put away the software of your youth and move on. Same guy, though. He had an Apple IIgs that he had fixed up, and he played video games on it. So maybe the guy was that's a new thing, right? The old timer, the nostalgic, somebody nostalgic for the old games, the good old days when computers were computers and men were men, and you coded in AppleSoft Basic on the command line. 88 probably still uses Encarta. That's right. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Kim Schaffer's here to answer your calls. Let's get to the calls. Your first call of the day right after this. Hey, got a new sponsor I'm excited about. Have you ever heard of a company called Next Issue? Actually, I have. I signed up for Next Issue, I was just looking, I think 2 years ago. The idea is there are a lot of great magazines out there. You'd love to read them on your portable device, on your iPad or your smartphone. But so you're not going to come home with a stack of magazines, although I used to do this from the newsstand. Next Issue is the next best thing. The Next Issue mobile app lets you literally tap into read the world's most popular magazines anywhere, anytime, on your phone or tablet. I'm talking Wired. I'm talking Bloomberg Business, Fast Company, Esquire, Rolling Stone, and more. The app will automatically download your magazines. It lets you have instant access to all your favorites, with or without Wi-Fi. It's great for an airplane trip. You just load it up with your magazines from Next Issue. I want you to go to nextissue.com. I'm going to go there right now, /techguy. You can find out more and sign up for a 30-day free trial today. I love reading popular science. And the thing is, I don't necessarily want to read the whole magazine, but just having an article available to read is fabulous. Like, there's always an article in Rolling Stone I want to read. I don't want to subscribe. I don't want to get it on the newsstand. I don't want to carry it around. But that one article, it's there. And the nice thing is, you get it for a flat rate. Your magazines look exactly like they do on the print page, just as if you subscribed individually. But with Next Issue, you get hundreds of options and bonus features at a whole lot better price. One price, one app, gives you everything. Declutter your life. I don't want more magazines. Get rid of the magazines. Discover new content that fits your passions and interests. That's one of the things I like about this. You may not buy a magazine for one article, but with Next Issue, no problem. And you get immediate access to all of the top magazines. Take a look at the catalog and you can see. nextissue.com/techguy for a 30-day free trial today. I like pulling out recipes from the cooking magazines. I get inspired to work out with the men's fitness, the health magazines. And occasionally there's an article in Brides magazine I like to read. I love Condé Nast Traveler. You're going to love it. Next Issue, if you like reading and you like to have something on your tablet that's always, always good and engaging, nextissue.com/techguy. Okay, I admit it. It's all about the gossip magazines for me. That's the real reason. I don't want to be caught buying entertainment magazine at the newsstand. Hello. No. That's the real reason. Next. Oh, and look, they got Macworld too. nextissue.com/techguy. What are you doing? Why are you hunched over your microphone? That's bad for your posture. Sit.
I'm talking to somebody who sounds like a robot.
I am. You know what? It might be sometimes
something scrambled and digitized. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I'm not going to put them on with you.
It's not intelligible.
No. I wish you could hear it.
Is it Stephen Hawking? What line is it?
It's the hold here. I'll put them on hold. It's hold on. It's 4.
Hello.
Hello.
Sounds fine.
Not to me.
I think Kim's having trouble.
I thought it was fine, too. I'm talking and I'm fine.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Well, I'll put you on hold again. Hold on, because we want Kim to...
I wonder if something's wrong with my phone.
How do I put somebody on hold? I never can remember. Oh, here.
Okay.
Do I do that and
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you got yeah. it. Hello? Are you... Okay, this is not good.
Now, he still sounds like a robot?
Let me check another line.
We need to reboot the...
Hello? Hi, tech guy. Oh, yeah. It's everyone.
Uh-oh. Burke!
Help.
Well, I got a few calls. We need to talk to Kim. We need to reboot the phone thing. Kim got a brand new phone system.
All of the phone calls sound.
Everybody sounds like a robot. Bear with us if you're calling in 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to reboot the phone system. Can we do that without hanging up on everybody? Do I need to stall? Papa got a brand new phone system. Ow! 8888 Ask Leo. I'm just going to... What's Burke is going down to the basement. Okay.
So, yeah.
Did he say he's going to flip a switch or anything? Because I'm afraid of picking up somebody. Well, yeah. Should I talk to Tracy?
You want to talk to Tracy?
Yeah. And Tracy, if we get cut off, blame Burke. He's headed down to the basement to flip the switch. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call.
Is this say you're going on a 500-mile backpack trip?
Yeah, it's at Camino de Santiago. Starts out in France and then goes across to Spain.
I'm so jealous. Oh my gosh, that sounds wonderful.
Well,
are there little huts along the way you can stay in? Or are you going to sleep out in the cold or what?
No. There's like hostels that you can stay in or hotels even. It's however you want to do it.
You're going on a walkabout in France and Spain.
Right. Wonderful. And really starting to get nervous over it, over the little details and such. And I had just purchased a Sony video camera similar to the GoPro.
Yeah.
Handheld.
Yeah.
And I'm curious because I could be filming up to 30 hours. And I'm just not sure how I address the memory card size that I need to get, how many I need to bring.
Yeah. Good question.
Do I need to plan on, bringing a flash drive? Because I will have access to computers that, from what I understand, along the way.
So you can offload them if you needed to.
Right. Right.
Does it, like the GoPro, does it take a little micro SD card? Is that the memory card in there?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And what's the max it can take? Probably 128 gigs, I would guess.
I don't know. I mean, the card that I have is 32, but
Well, you could, but on the other hand, the reason I don't buy the max that I can use, and by the way, that could vary depending on the camera, so you should check the specs, is the more pictures you put on one card, the more you're risking.
That's true.
If the card fails. So I'm torn between buying really big cards so I don't have to change them as much and really little ones so I don't risk as much. I think what I do on a trip like that is I buy enough cards to last me the whole trip, even though I might be able to offload them. In fact, I would encourage you to offload them.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the cards as another backup. Remember, a backup is multiple copies of the same thing, ideally on different formats. So I don't like to erase my cards as I go, unless I absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Sony, so it might... I know my Sony cameras have a feature built in that's really cool. I can copy the photos to my phone via Wi-Fi. I tap the phone to the camera, and it goes... We use a program called Play Memories that comes from Sony, and it goes, hey, I see a camera. Do you want me to copy everything? So on my last trip, I was using that as a backup, too. They're not as high quality as the originals, but there's something that,
Well, this is going to be taking video.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much my camera on my phone will be able, to
Well, that's
hold.
The first thing to figure out is, and I'm sure, like the GoPro, you can take different quality video, depending.
Mm-hmm.
So figure out what quality video you're going to want, which means I would say go out today and shoot some samples. You're going to be mostly outside, right?
Yes.
So shoot some samples outside, but maybe you'll be inside the hostel and there'll be somebody with a guitar and you'll all gather around and you'll be singing campfire songs. And I have a rich imagination, as you probably determined.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Kumbaya. And so that might be a little dark, so you might want to shoot one inside just to see. And then look at the different qualities and see what the quality you want is. And then do some math to figure out, okay, well, that's a gigabyte a minute or whatever it is. Typically, it would be on something like that, a gigabyte an hour.
Okay.
Is that right? Am I right? Am I crazy? No, I think that's right. So, but you could even look in the manual on the camera. It'll tell you. So if you get 32 gig cards, that's quite a bit of video. You should be, you should, I would, you know, you just have to figure, I can't tell you how many pictures you're going to take, how much video you're going to shoot. My, can I tell you some suggestions?
Yes.
Shoot short clips.
Okay.
People always shoot like all 4 hours of the campfire songs. No, nobody wants that. Shoot, I shoot 6 second clips just with audio, just enough to get a flavor of it. And then I mix that in with stills. And then when you get back, you can make a little show. And the, it's funny, you know, 6 to 10 seconds is, seems like very little, but really it's enough for the memory.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a movie, right, they never sit on anything for very long. 10 seconds would be a long time in a movie to watch one thing. So I think, and the other thing don't do is pan around. And so if the shot's going on to the point where you want to move it, move the camera and go, oh, look at that, stop and refocus and then shoot. Try little clips. I think this is a good idea. Today, you have an assignment. Go out. It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon. Go out. Shoot some six-second clips, some stills, because that camera will do stills, too. They're not as good as the stills from a point-and-shoot, but they're pretty good. And then come home and put it in iMovie or a video editor and make a little movie of it. And you'll see that those little six-second clips just bring it to life. And they're enough. They're enough that people aren't going to say, okay, that was a lot on that guy singing. You must have really liked him.
Well, so how do I figure out, you know, when I'm doing my video today, how much?
It'll be in the manual. It'll say, if you shoot this quality, it'll be 100 megabytes a minute. If you shoot this quality, it'll be 50 megabytes a minute.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, and then you can do some math, and you could say, you know, on a given day, I'm probably going to shoot, you know. I would say if you had a 32-gig card, that would last you several days, even with video. Unless you, like I said, start the camera, put it on a shelf, and let it record everything for an hour. You're not going to watch that. Nobody's going to watch that.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
It's a lesson that I've learned through bitter experience. I have long videotapes that I'm never going to watch because it's too much. But if you put little six-second clips, what you could do, you could shoot 10 or 15 seconds and take the best six. But that just – and a little audio, and it's just right. It's just – it's like a flavor gem of your trip. But then I would say if you got – you're going to be 2 weeks?
No, this is like 35 days.
Holy cow.
And it's like 15 to 20 miles a day.
Yikes. And, so, I mean, I don't want you to buy 30 cards, although they're cheap. You know, this is the good news is these little SD cards, micro SD cards, aren't very expensive. I'd say 10 would be more than enough. Okay. And then do find some way to copy them. You're not bringing a computer, I guess.
Not bringing a computer. But so my understanding is that these locations, you have access to a computer.
Yeah, but that's not going to – well, first of all, make sure you bring a card reader. And you may not – they may not let you plug in a USB card reader. I mean, who knows what they're going to let you do or whether you'll even want to do that on a public computer. So hold on. We'll take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm so jealous. Still like robots? Sounds like fun, Tracy. So tell me about this again. What's the name of it?
It's a Camino de Santiago.
The Saints and, Road.
And if you, I don't know if you saw the movie The Way with Martin Sheen.
Yeah, that's it. Huh?
That's where we had learned about it. That's been something that's been going on for, you know, 1,000 years.
Is it a pilgrimage?
Yes, it's following the way of St. James.
Fantastic.
And so, in Santiago is where his remains are, or
so are you,
believed to be.
Are you doing this as a spiritual, religious pilgrimage for yourself, or just following the way?
Everything.
Oh, how neat.
You know.
How wonderful. And there'll be, is it a certain time of the year, and others will be doing this pilgrimage as well?
Yeah. I guess May and September are the busiest.
Because right. It's way too hot in the summertime.
Yeah. So,
although you're high up, it might not be too bad.
There's thousands of people that go. And,
wow.
Yeah, so going across the Pyrenees. And actually, the first day is supposed to be the hardest, most severe climb and descent. Right.
So you get to a plateau, and then you can kind of walk through the Pyrenees. And
you get up to a you uphill and then you a pretty drastic downhill is the first day,
And then that's and then the rest of it's
it levels out. Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to be barefoot?
No, I was thinking about that transporter thing.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, this is so great. Are you training a little bit for it?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I've been
so fun
walking around in my area around home and with my loaded backpack and trying to go the distance and make sure that my shoes fit perfect.
Sounds awesome. So the it really is going to vary on your camera of how much, but somebody's telling me 7 minutes of video at high quality is about a gigabyte.
Oh, really?
So okay. So one card, if you get a 32 gig card, then think of it as maybe 3 hours, which is a lot. That's why 10 cards would be more than enough. You don't want to bring home 30 hours of video.
That's what I understand. Another gentleman who had done this, and he posted it online. His vlog, and so yeah, he ended up with 30 hours and then got it down to each day about 7 to 10 minute
perfect
presentation. Yeah,
yeah, and that's really over coverage, frankly.
Yeah,
35 days okay. times 7 minutes. Really? How long was the way? Come on. So, I mean, it just depends. Are you going to bring it back to a church and show it as a documentary kind of thing?
My husband has got a blog that he's setting up, and so we may post it online.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Whoever wants to see it.
I wouldn't count on, unless you have some good documentation about the kinds of computers that you're going to find at these hostels, on the ability to copy the video off, edit it, upload it to a blog, all of that. Just because that may not be practical, and for instance, if I were running a public computer, I would never let anybody plug a USB drive into it. That's a great way to get it infected and then infect everybody else who plugs their USB into it.
Right. Okay. Well, I can go onto the forum and find out.
Yeah. Read what they're doing. But, you know, even if you just brought, 6 to 10 cards and, at night, maybe delete the stuff you're not using.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go, oh, that was blurry. I think even 6 cards or 5 or 6 cards would probably be enough if they're 32 gigs.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. And they're cheap now. That's like $15 for the cards. They're not expensive.
Great.
Each.
Well, I like that idea, too.
Great to talk to you. Have a wonderful trip. And then call back and give us a link so we can see the results.
Absolutely. We'll do that.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you, Tracy.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You take care.
She's got legs, and she's going to walk for 35 days across the Pyrenees Leo Laporte, the tech guy, was talking off the air with our caller to help her figure out how much memory do you need? And, I think in some ways having for one thing, I would say bring in enough cards that you don't have to erase them because those cards are your backup. And they're small, and you can store them somewhere. The only question is the expense up front. And micro SD cards, which is the kind of card she's be using, aren't that expensive. So I think they're about, 15, 20 bucks each. So for $100, get 5 cards, you're good. And then if you feel like that's not going to be enough, you can erase the cards every night, erase not the whole card, but just stuff that you won't want. It's blurry or it's messed up or whatever. There's no usually enough, so that you've got the cards. Don't count on backup. There, I guess you could bring something with you that would allow you to back up those micro SD cards. The camera has a USB port, so you could think of it as a card reader. So you could plug the camera into. If you had a computer, that'd be the best. Small computer, plug it in there. It sounds like a wonderful trip. On my last 2-week trip to Europe a couple of weeks ago, I brought 4 cards. Didn't fill them up. I think they were 64 gig cards or maybe they might have been 32s. Didn't fill them up. But I don't ever erase them because I want to take them home. That's going to be my backup, right? And when I travel, I try to copy the photos to the hard drive every night. I love this Google Photos, but Flickr's doing this now too, Microsoft's OneDrive. If you have some sort of cloud storage system, carbonite. Then I was doing this with my my smartphone. I'd copy the photos to the smartphone. And then overnight, I let the smartphone very slowly, because I was on T-Mobile, so the speed wasn't super fast, copy them up to Google Photos. And then I'd have a backup. So even if the worst, I lost all my cards, I'd be okay. Marty, Los Angeles is next. Hey, Marty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Let me turn the radio off there. I am interested in something that's a little hard to pronounce, obfuscation. So I let you describe
it. I got a better word for you. You want another one?
Yes.
Steganography.
Steganography. Oh, wow. We're getting out there now.
So obfuscation is, it's a normal English word that means to hide something. And in the case of technology, it means to, for instance, if you write something in JavaScript, which is normally visible to anybody visiting your page, you can obfuscate the code so that it is less easy to read.
Right. And that's what I'm interested in doing. So developing Android apps, you post your app out there and somebody can reverse engineer it or decompile it. And I'm just interested in your review.
Is there something magical that you're going to be doing in this app that people are going to say, like the secret recipe to Coca-Cola is embedded in it? I've got to figure this out.
I wasn't going to disclose that yet.
But. So there's a few things you can do. There's nothing you can do to keep somebody from disassembling.
Yeah, it's nothing magic. It's just protecting me from the 1% that wants to decompile it, right?
Yeah, you can always disassemble code. The way Java works, which is the system used on Android, it doesn't compile to the CPU. It compiles to a intermediate code.
APXs.
Yeah. Which is then run.
APKs.
APKs, which is that. But, the APK contains bytecode, is what they call
right.
it. Bytecode's not too hard to read. I don't know. In the old days, the way you'd obfuscate code is by you can't really control what the compiler is going to do with the code, but by making sure, for instance, there's no the symbol tables don't go along with the code, so people can't get variable names. That's kind of a giveaway of the variable names. I don't know what you do with Java. I don't know if you can do that.
I'm just using the
Android Studio probably.
I'm not doing anything magical. I'm just putting together some apps that I'd like to protect more. You can go up to $25K a year for some products, and then you can find something for free, and then they all claim to obfuscate. So
right.
I'd like to know what's...
Well...
Shield 4J is one of
That's interesting. Okay, so it probably runs it through some... It can't obfuscate it so much that the computer can't use it,
yeah,
right?
On the same page.
Still has to be runnable code. So if somebody wants to really figure out what you're doing, they just wait until the obfuscation is deobfuscated so that the phone can run it.
Uh-huh.
And they capture the memory, and now they have it unobfuscated. Don't use obfuscation.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think that that's a false sense of security. Nobody's going to decompile your code. Really? Are you doing something so magical that somebody's going to say, I've got to figure out how he did that?
Yeah. Well,
no, you're not. That's a lot. Believe me, it's a skill. Hackers use decompiling or disassembling to kind of figure out if there's security flaws in code. That's a valuable little tool. But it's rare that somebody takes a program, reverse engineering it doesn't even need the code, right? You just figure out how it works and then write it yourself. It's not, unless you're writing something that's magical.
Right. No, nothing magical. Just
I wouldn't
just
worry about it.
Another level of protection.
Yeah, don't spend money on obfuscation.
Huh. Somebody's making $25K a year on it, so don't tell anybody.
Yeah, somebody, Trex is in the chat room saying the way obfuscators do it is to make variable names and function names unidentifiable. You can do that yourself.
Okay, right.
Just don't use function names and variable names that make sense. Now, that's going to make it hard for you to read as well. But that's what I was talking about, the so-called symbol table. That's the names assigned to memory addresses. And if you have, I've done some disassembly decompiling. If you're doing it and you have the symbol table, it's a lot easier because you can kind of see what the programmer's intent was.
Right.
If all you get back from your disassembly is jump to C39472, a little harder to figure out what's going on. Okay. So, but if you just use That's an interesting question, actually. I've never thought about this. You just use non-obvious names for your variables and functions. You know, at Microsoft, they have, I don't know if they still use it, Charles Simonier, who was a very famous programmer, actually came up with a naming convention. I think most big companies probably use a naming convention so that you can look at a function name or a variable name and kind of know what it does. Apple does this. Microsoft used to do it with the, I don't know what they're doing now. I'm sure they do, though, because in a company, you a variety of people need to look at code, and there's code review and all of that. Is it just you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Use your kids' names. Call Judy. you know, make up something.
Sure.
That's all. You know, I don't think that you and I think you worry about something that's not going to be a big issue. But I wish you luck. I think it's exciting to write your own. Are these your first apps?
First, I would probably compile. I've got a big software background in embedded software.
And okay.
So I understand certain needs in certain levels of security, but yeah, this isn't at that level.
Yeah, if you're writing, ATM code, you probably would prefer people don't figure out how things are done.
Right.
But I think on an app, and as I said, at some point it has to be unobfuscated in some form in order for the computer to run it.
Right. You hold the unobfuscated code. That's
yeah. Yeah, and then all the computer gets is numbers. That's all the computer wants anyway. It doesn't care.
The assembly code.
Yeah, it doesn't care your silly human function name is. Just give me a number. Where do I jump?
Right. Yeah. Hey, I appreciate the.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you probably should go to, you know, Stack Exchange or somewhere where there's actual real working coders and ask them, what do you think? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, I think it's silly. So I thought he wanted to talk about steganography. I'll talk about that. So have we fixed it?
No.
We can't take calls.
I plug in the phone to the system so she can actually do it through the phone.
So do you know where the issue lies?
I'm not sure.
I can pick them up. Why does mine work and hers not?
I'm not sure.
I bet it's her thing.
Something going.
It says I have to go in and set, give it an IP address.
Why don't you call... do we have Telos support?
I'm going to get back to the phone with Alex. I think he knows how to do it first.
Okay. So go to support. This is a Telos. I would guess a Telos issue, not the provider issue, because it's working for me.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'll just pick up calls unscreened.
Okay. Sorry.
I don't care about that. So they can hear you. So what you'll do is pick them up. Say, hey, we're going to put you on the air. I can't really talk to you, so.
Well, I can't understand you.
Yeah, I can't understand you. You're a robot. But Leo's going to get to you. And just when he gets to you, you know, whatever you tell him, say.
Have a clear, concise question.
Clear, concise question. Don't ask him how he's feeling, because he's feeling fine. And tell him your first, not your last name, but your first name and city. Or I'll say, what's your first name?
All right.
You know what? Larry King does this way. Caller.
Well,
what's your name and city? It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. So Jason, he says, use ProGuard. It's built into Android Studio. I think this feels paranoid. But I didn't. So, but one of the issues is certainly when you're doing compiled code, you don't include the symbol table with the shipping code. And I gather that Java does. So that would be possibly an issue. Yeah, because Larry King... he just knows, you know, the region you're calling.
Hey, Claulo, what's your question?
Peoria.
Chicago,
hello. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking about obfuscation, and I said, I got another word for you, steganography. I thought maybe we were going to talk about encryption and encoding. Steganography is fascinating. Somebody in the chat room said it's called hiding in plain sight. And spies might use this, or anybody who wants to send a secret message without anybody knowing a secret message being sent. You know, if you encrypt your email, it's obvious you've encrypted it. It looks like garbage. You're sending gibberish, and people look at it and go, ah, there's something in here. I want to decipher it. But if you use steganography, to the casual observer, it doesn't appear that you've done anything. An example would be to take an image and encode the image using special encoding in such a way that the image looks normal but contains a secret message in the bits. And that's not hard to do at all. It's kind of an interesting sideline to coding. That way I could, you know, I could text you a picture. And anybody along the way would say, well, that's nice. Leo just sent a picture. Instead, it's a secret message. The eagle flies at midnight. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're going to go back to the phones. And I'm going to Southern California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, what's your name?
Richard.
Hey, Richard, what can I do for you?
I have a Windows 7 machine, and I've been trying to back up through Microsoft's backup program, and it goes maybe two-thirds of the way according to the slider, and then it cuts out, and it says, can't complete.
Arr.
I've tried CDs, and I've tried DVDs, so the problem is...
Have you run check disk just to make sure that the data on the hard drive itself is okay?
No, I haven't done that in 100 years.
I know. No one has. Remember you used to, you'd boot up your computer and say, I don't know what happened. Something went wrong. You better run check disk.
Okay. I can try that.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. I don't think Microsoft's backup program is all that. I don't like any program that puts your backed up data in a ball that you can't see into, and that's what Microsoft's program does.
Huh.
And the reason is... Yeah, you run it. Maybe it says, okay, thumbs up, and you've got this file. You don't really know what is in there. Did it get everything? Is everything okay?
Right.
It's kind of I don't know about you, but I'm always nervous when I have a backup that, gosh, is this going to restore?
Yeah. It's in preparation, obviously, for 10.
Ah, good. So here's my recommendation. First of all, you only need to back up stuff you made.
Right.
Don't back up apps. Don't back up the operating system. Just your documents, your pictures, the things that you created that you shouldn't lose. And my favorite way to back up is to simply copy them. So get an external hard drive and drag the files over. Or if you want to make it automated, there are a number of really nice copying programs. Microsoft makes a free one called SyncToy, SyncToy. That's free.
Right.
What it does is it synchronizes folders, which is actually very handy.
Yes, it would be, sure.
Yeah. And then you can look at your backup and you can say, well, I see all my files, I see all my folders. And you can spot check. You can open one or two and see, are they there? And it gives, I don't know about you, but it gives me peace of mind. I feel like, oh, good. I know I've got a backup. And by the way, Windows 10 upgrade is almost completely painless. The backup is just belt and suspenders to be a little extra cautious.
I have a question about that, if I may.
Yeah.
I have an 8.1 on a portable. I have yet to see that thing, that icon or whatever it is that you've mentioned a few times where it says you want to upgrade to 10.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to do that because I'm taking your advice and waiting.
Good.
But on the other hand, how would I get to do it when I'm ready?
Well, there are a number of ways to do it, but my advice is to wait until Microsoft invites you. So the that little pop-up, first of all, make sure that on that tablet or portable that Windows 8 is activated. So you go into the control panel. Make sure it's activated. It's properly activated. I'm sure it is. But
it
just
came with the machine, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And then you're really waiting until Microsoft gives you the thumbs up, because what Microsoft's doing is it's not offering it until it knows that that upgrade's going to go smoothly.
Oh, I see.
So in my case, for instance, I forced it. You can force it. Microsoft has Windows 10 as downloadable media on their website. You can download what they call an ISO, make an install disk. And I did that on my Dell, but it didn't activate right away. Some of the drivers weren't there. The Dell updater that I used to update Dell software wasn't there. It was kind of it wasn't the best. So I rolled the Dell back and waited. And almost immediately, I got the invitation. And then when I went ahead, it had everything. It was like it activated instantly. It had all the drivers. And so what I'm guessing is that Microsoft works with the manufacturers like Dell to make an upgrade that is designed for that system.
So if
you haven't got the invitation, and Microsoft has said this, it may be a month or even longer before everybody gets upgraded.
Now, when you say invitation, does it come in an email?
No, it popped up on the screen. Now, beware. You want to obviously make sure it really is from Microsoft. But it popped up on the screen and said, would you like to upgrade to Windows 10? And it was almost immediately after I rolled back the Dell and said, oh, would you like to upgrade to Windows 10?
Yeah.
And then I said yes, and it was painless.
Right.
It was quick.
And I have a feeling Dell has more clout than Asus does.
Well, but no, I don't think so. Asus is good. I like Asus. And which Asus do you have?
Gosh, I don't know what to
Because Mary Jo Foley, who does our Windows podcast, has an Asus S7. And I'm trying to remember if she – I think she has gotten the invitation. But right. I think with a OE – they're called an OEM, original equipment manufacturer. With right. an OEM machine, I like the idea of waiting until Microsoft ascertains that it's compatible and has assembled the pieces that you need that are unique to your machine. So don't be in a rush.
Oh, I'm not in a rush. I was just curious.
Because yeah, that's
– a few times over the couple of weeks.
Microsoft's not very forthcoming on the details on all of this. But my guess, and I think it's an educated guess, is that it's not happening until it's ready. You
right.
will get the invitation. Microsoft has said it may take a while.
Okay.
And so I do strongly recommend you wait. If you're impatient, as I was, you can go to Microsoft's site and download a legit copy of Windows 10. And when you install it, it should activate because you have a legit copy of Windows 8.
Right.
So if you're in a hurry, you can do that. My advice is not to.
No, I'm in no rush. I can wait 2 months to let them sort out their bugs.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's pretty good. Yeah. We are getting regular updates already. We've had a cumulative update.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm actually really pleased with Windows 10 and with the process that has happened here. I think it's gone very smoothly. Microsoft, after just a few days, said 67 million people had upgraded. I would guess it's hundreds of millions by now.
Right.
And the total universe, of course, is 1.5 billion Windows users. I think almost a billion were eligible, 800 million, something like that. So there's a lot of people, and Microsoft obviously is staging this out. They can't do it all at once.
Oh, no, everything would crash.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Okay, sir, thank you much.
Hey, my very great pleasure. I appreciate it. If you don't want to use SyncToy, I've used for years a lovely program. It's not free. It's shareware from a company called Centered Systems. It's called Second Copy. You can just Google Second Copy. That's an excellent synchronization program, all the features you need. To me, that's a better backup. That's how I like to backup. And it would behoove me at this point. Hey, we got the phones working. It's nice. Okay, we can talk to everybody. I'll talk to Louie next in Los Angeles. His videos are not coming through on the photo stream, but the pictures are. Why not? Well, we'll talk about that. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Love to hear from you. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can Skype from the rest of the world. We're going to talk more about computers, more about Windows 10, smartphones, smartwatches. Our camera guy is coming up a little bit. We got a lot more to come. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did you hear my doorbell ring a minute ago? I love it. I've got this Ring doorbell. It actually, I had to turn the sound off on my iPad because it actually rings the iPad when somebody's at the front door. It has a motion detector as well as a doorbell. So when the doorbell rings, I hear, dong, dong, dong. And then I get on my Ring software, which I have right here, I'll get missed calls. So today at 12:15, somebody rang the doorbell. And had I not been on the air, that's the video at our front door. Had I not been on the air, I could have pressed accept and talked to them. Actually, I don't see him. Oh, there he is. I know who that is. We have a new neighbor kid. So I could have said, I'm sorry, Pierce. Michael's not here. As if I were in the house. Now, this is a huge security solution. This is wonderful. Think of it as kind of, they say it's like having caller ID on your house. See, the bad guys, about 95% of all home break-ins happen during the day, believe it or not, when you're not home. Oh, he knew I was watching. You see that? He flashed me the peace sign. Or he just moved in yesterday, our new neighbor kid. So this it shows missed calls. It also shows motion. So if there's motion at the front door, I can see it. Bad guys, though, tend to ring the doorbell because they want to know if you're home. Oh, there's my daughter leaving. So I know exactly what time people come and go. I've got video of it. All of this from my Ring doorbell. And I'll tell you what, it is so easy to install. Now, I had a wired doorbell, so I just replaced my existing, ding-dong doorbell. You unscrew it, it turns out there's just two wires coming out of a hole. And everything you need to hook this doorbell up to it is there. You tie it to your Wi-Fi, and all of a sudden, wherever you are on the internet, you can answer your doorbell. I can't let her in, but that's fine. I can talk to her, or I could see movement. I have a record of it, which is really great. You do have to pay a subscription fee, but it's like $30 a year for storing all the motion and movement and everything. You don't have to do that if you don't want to. Very easy to install. Has an iOS or Android app. I was just showing you the iOS app. You do need Wi-Fi. And right now, we're giving you $10 off when you go to ring.com/techguy. So you see, it comes with a drill bit. By the way, this will also work if you don't have a traditional doorbell. It has a battery, lithium-ion year battery in it. So the battery will last a year. It has a little USB thing. So every year you take it off, you charge it up by the USB port, and you got another year of it, which is awfully cool. Isn't that great? See, there's the USB port. I don't need that because I have a wired doorbell. But if you don't, like here at the Brick House, we don't have a doorbell. So I'm going to glue this right there, and then once a year I'll take it down. It has a special proprietary screw to keep people from taking it. I'll take it down, charge it up, and then that way people can ring the door at the front of the studio. I don't have to have somebody in the front. I can just check. It's so cool. Ring, the Ring video doorbell. I've tried a bunch of them. What did I do? I messed this up. There we go. I tried a bunch of them. This is the one. Installing Ring is fast. It's easy. It works with your current wiring or a built-in rechargeable. Time magazine named it one of the best gadgets of last year, one of the top 10 gadgets of last year. I think it's so great. I just discovered it. I'm thrilled. Ring.com/tech guy. The Ring video doorbell. So let's see if there's anybody at my door right now. It says very wide angle. So on the other thing I should show you, which is cool, is you can set how sensitive the motion detector is. So recent activity, device settings, motion settings. I don't need to watch the video. They have a lot of videos that make it easier to start up. So you can say what the zones are and the range. So I had originally turned off on to go 30 feet out, and I was going off all the time as a car went by on the street. So I've moved it in. I've reined it in a little bit. You can say, oh, don't pay any attention to this zone. Just like if somebody's out there, you totally control it. You can make it go all the way out or all the way in if you want, whatever you want. So that's really cool. Let me see. I have to set it back. Actually, you know what? That should work. I'm going to leave it like that. Smart alert will identify repeated or continuous motion and only notifies you again once that activity is concluded. So that way, in other words, you can decide how often you want to get bugged. It is really awesome. Ring.com/tech guy. Sorry, I'm spending a lot of... Oh, hey, I can change the chimes. Link your account. Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, you can have multiple doorbells on a single single app, which is really cool. So that's why I want to get one out the front door here.
That I could be sitting in the studio and I could say, hey, go away. Get away from there. Yo, kids, get off of my lawn.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, smartphones and home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. If you hear something and you want to make a note of it, don't have to. You don't have to. We do that for you. You've got your Tech Guy Labs show notes online at techguylabs.com. So you don't have to write anything down. That's good. If you're driving around, you don't want to be taking out the pen and writing while you're driving. You just remember, all you have to remember is techguylabs.com. Bunch of new phones on their way. This is going to be a busy month. It suddenly realized what happened. Normally, the phone manufacturers were waiting till the big show in Berlin called IFA, I-F-A. It's one of the oldest computer and technology trade shows. It's been going on for almost 100 years. And because it used to be radio, Telefunken. But these days, it tends to be mobile devices, especially mobile phones. And in past years, Samsung and others have waited to IFA to announce. But IFA's in September. And who else announces? I'm trying to think. Who else announces phones in September? Oh, yeah, Apple. In fact, the rumor is that Apple's, the week of September 8th, that's going to be the big announcement for the next iPhone, which we jocularly call the iPhone 6S. Probably will be, but we just don't know. We don't really know anything about it. There have been a few leaks. We think that the iPhone 6S You know, Apple typically doesn't do a whole redesign, but every other year. So it will look like last year's iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. Won't be bigger or different. Have the same basic hardware. But some new features. We think there'll be Force Touch in the screen. I think that, in my opinion, that's not a killer technology at all. In fact, it's kind of a flop. I know I'm one of the only tech journalists who's willing to say that, but I really think it's just not natural. It first appeared on the Apple Watch. On the watch, you can press it lightly. It does one thing. You press it more deeply, harder, and it does another thing. And it's confusing. You're never really sure when you can Force Touch. It's less confusing on the watch than it is on the computer. They have Force Touch now on trackpads on some of the computers. I have a MacBook that does that. I turned it off. I don't know what it's going to do. I don't know which programs will respond, which won't. I don't know what's going to happen. It's not like a right-click on the mouse. A right-click on the mouse, you kind of know what you're going to have, a contextual menu pop up that'll show you things you can do with the thing you right-clicked on. It's kind of, you know, at first people didn't, when the right-click first appeared, people go, I didn't use it. But over time, I think we've gotten used to it, and it makes a lot of sense. I don't think Force Touch is like that. I think it doesn't make sense at all. Anyway, that's one of the new features on the iPhone. I presume the camera will be improved. There's certainly room for improvement. Right now, it's only 8 megapixels. It's being eclipsed by many other smartphone cameras. So you could make it a better camera. There's not a whole lot more you can do. I'm not sure. Anyway, the iPhone 6S will be out in September 8th or 9th, we think. But everybody else is saying, oh, well, I got to jump on this before. People are so scared of Apple. They're saying, well, we got to sell our phones now before Apple comes out with theirs and nobody's interested in what we have to say. So Motorola has announced two new Moto X's, which are great phones, and a Moto G, which may end up being the world beater. It's the best-selling Motorola phone by far because it's cheap. Starts at under $200. That's out the door. I mean, that's not the subsidized price. That's not with a two-year contract. That's out the door, unlocked. You can run it on any carrier. So I've ordered one. I'll have one on Tuesday. I'll talk about it next weekend. But that was a nice phone last year. I think it's going to be an even better phone this year. Samsung has a big announcement. Samsung Unpacked. I think it's next week, in which they're reputedly going to announce a Galaxy Note 5 that no one will want, in my opinion, because it will be a little better than the Galaxy Note 4, minus the removable battery and the SD card. And I think that's what people want in a phone like that. They're also announcing a giant Galaxy S6, the S6 Plus size. You couldn't make this stuff up. Who else? OnePlus One, which had a great phone last year, one of the best phones of the year. The OnePlus 2 is going to be, you have to get an invite, but it'll be available for sale in a couple of days, Tuesday. If you have an invite, ask your buddies. You got an invite? Little mistake on the part of the chief executive officer of OnePlus, however. He said, wait, you think this OnePlus 2 is good? Wait till you see the phone we come out with in December. Whoops. If you can't wait till December, I guess the OnePlus 2 is a great choice. Wait till you see the next one we're coming out with in a couple of months. That's never a good idea. If just a little marketing tip. HTC, I don't know what's going to happen with them. They're kind of slowly sliding down the chute. They're at the bottom of that chute, BlackBerry, Nokia. You know, it's not a good place to be. New phones. We'll see. iPhone, Motorola, Samsung, and OnePlus. All new phones in the next month or two. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to our phones we go. Louie's on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Louie.
Hey, Leo. Thanks. I just got back from a big cruise in the Baltic, and I had a lot of videos. And when I came in, I had my photo stream to go into my computer. All my pictures came through, but the videos don't come through.
Oh, that's frustrating. What did you shoot the video on?
On my iPad.
And you connected it up to iTunes, right?
Yes.
Or did you, well, you connected, how did you connect it to the computer? Did you connect it with a wire or did you let it use the internet?
No, I let it use the internet, and okay. All my pictures came through like they always did.
Yeah, on iCloud. But you don't see them. Now, have you upgraded your Mac? Are you using a Mac or a PC?
I'm using the iPad.
You said the iPad. And so the iPad has been upgraded to use Photos, right?
Yes.
Photos should be able to see those. That's interesting. I'm not sure why it can't.
The pictures are on the videos are on the iPad.
Oh.
But when I go into my computer, and they're not there.
Oh, I see. So, okay. So you took them on the iPad, so they're already there. The issue is that they're not showing up. And what kind of computer do you use?
I use, I got Windows 7. Windows, okay. And I have Picasa.
So the issue is, why are my iPad videos not showing up on my Windows PC?
Correct.
I am going to have to maybe punt on that one because I'm a little unclear on how Windows handles the media over Wi-Fi. Chat room, Eliz, have you done this? Because the chat room is saying they're there, they're just not. Picasa may not be picking up the folder that they're in. Gosh, it sure seems... Okay, here we go. Adrian says you do need to sync those manually because they don't want to use... They're so big, they're worried about using up bandwidth with it. So how would... I guess what you need to do is you need to hook that iPad up to your computer. Do you have a cable?
Yes.
Hook it up to your computer. And when you do, the computer should say, I see you have some photos. It should launch Picasa. And then it will copy not only the photos, but the video over into Picasa.
Well, I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, Scooter X is giving us a link, which I'll put in the show notes, to the support note on Apple's website. Import photos and videos from your iPad to your Windows PC. And the key is to use the app that's on your PC for, in this case, Picasa, with a cable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That makes sense. It just doesn't want to do that over Wi-Fi. That makes sense. PhotoStream doesn't sync videos, just... Here we go. Thank you, Raymond Toth. Nice to see you again, Raymond. iMore.com, let's put this in the show notes. This is the one you want. Missing videos after enabling iCloud Photo Library? Now, this is sounds like on a Mac. Wasn't showing up in my iPad. This might be a little different. Launch settings, tap videos. Turn on the option for show all videos. What? All videos that have been downloaded or stored in iCloud will be shown, huh? That's going in the other direction. I think all he has to do is hook up a cable. That's what I think. So you're getting your videos over Wi-Fi from an iPad to a Windows laptop? Eliz says it's working for her. I don't know. Picasa options enabled.mov and install QuickTime. Thank you. iCloud Photo will sync photos and videos. The older PhotoStream does not sync videos. So he should update. Or turn on iCloud Photo. Or hook up the cable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Boy, we got a lot of links thanks to our great chatters. If you want to be in the chat room, just go to the website. Instructions are there, techguylabs.com, on making sure your videos get copied along with your photos from your iPad to your Picasa on your Windows machine. And so we'll put links to that at techguylabs.com. In general, because, you know, on a Mac, when you hook up an iPad or iPhone to a Mac, it launches the Photos app and it's all handled. On a PC, there's no single guaranteed Photos app. So you have to associate some photo app on your PC with your iPad. He's using Picasa, so it'd be easy enough. I mean, Picasa's a good choice, in fact. But the fastest way would be just hook it up via USB cable. But we'll give you a number of different options there. Just go to the website, techguylabs.com. Doug on the line from Idaho. Hi, Doug. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How are you doing? What you up to there, Doug?
Well, I just had to change the speaker from back to manual.
Okay, I can kind of hear you. What can I do for you?
Okay, I just got a couple of comments.
Okay.
On VOIP.
Yeah, I could tell.
Searching last week because I wanted to get rid of my landline, and I wanted to move it to the internet.
Is this a landline?
No.
Didn't think so. Oh, you're on your cell phone. Okay.
Actually, through my cell phone, I could have called you on my landline now. But I ended up with Magic Jack.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice.
Yeah, because I've got 5 years for my small business for total cost, including the transfer fee, of $90 for 5 years of phone.
Nice.
I was paying about $50 a month.
See, Magic Jack does a lot of advertising. People need to be aware that when you move to a voice over internet product like this, that, of course, your phone service depends on your internet service. You're actually on a voice over the internet. That's how we do our calls here. So it's if you have sufficient bandwidth, voice over internet works great. In fact, the phone company, in many cases, long distance calls especially, are digital voice over the internet as well. But it all depends on bandwidth, quality of service. A lot of times, internet service providers have high latency, which means you've seen this probably, and you might see it with your Magic Jack from time to time, where you speak, and then there's a second in between your stopping and the next person picking up the conversational ball.
The worst latency, though, is on streaming video.
Yeah. That'll do it, too.
Well,
if you think about it, voice isn't very demanding, especially phone calls. It's not a lot of bandwidth, not a lot of data.
It's minimal.
Yeah, because our standards are so low. When Alexander Graham Bell first started adding telephone service to the country, they did a little calculation. What's the lowest quality we could use, and people would still be intelligible?
1,000 cycles wide.
Yeah, they didn't use very much.
I think they only used about 600 cycles of it.
Yeah. So as a result, and if you convert it to digital, we're talking like 6-bit. It's not very high quality. However, we've gotten a very adept at understanding phone calls. So your VoIP provider doesn't have to worry so much about bandwidth. More latency and dropped packets can be an issue too, because if you think about it, as I'm speaking to you, it's when it's converted to digital, it's a series of packets that come to you and then get decoded. If one of those packets gets dropped out, it'll start breaking up. And then there's ways that VoIP solutions solve this by doubling packets. So we sometimes get a strange effect like that. Sometimes it sounds robotic. All of these come from either slow or missing packets of data. Slow is as bad as missing, right? Because if you want to talk in real time and the packets, instead of coming 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, come 6, 4, 3, 1, 2, you got to wait until they're all there, reassemble it, and that can be a problem.
Yep.
However, I think Magic Jack does as good a job as anybody.
Yeah, and the price is on everybody else. For a small business, especially.
A lot more, yeah. We use a business solution. One of our advertisers, in fact, RingCentral. But we have a lot of bandwidth. And of course, I have 20 employees in here, so we need something that's... If it's just you and your business, Magic Jack should be fine. If you get 10 employees all using the same Magic Jack, now you got a problem.
Yeah, right. That's not the problem. No, I figured out... After looking for a week, that this is the best route.
Good.
Now, the other item I had, the lady that called you that's going to go on the tour.
Yeah.
How about taking a thumb drive and transferring all those pictures and files to her thumb drive? I just bought a brand new Lexar, 256 gigabyte.
What do you plug the thumb drive into?
A USB 3.0.
So one of the issue there, by the way, is that USB, unlike say FireWire or Thunderbolt, is, I hate to use this term, I don't want to use master slave, but that's what they call it. It's not a peer to peer system. There's a boss and there's an employee. Minimum wage employee. And the boss is your computer. And the employee is a USB drive. And that's why you can't hook two USB drives one to the other. There's no boss. The employees just stand around looking at each other. So you need a boss in the USB to PC relationship. And since she has a camera, and she can't just plug, you can't just plug, in most cameras, a USB drive into it. Now, there's a standard called USB to go. Some phones use this. Samsung phones use this. That actually make the phone, which is a computer if you think about it, be the master. So that, or I'm sorry, the boss. So that your employee USB key can plug, if you have the right kind of cable, can plug into it. I don't know about this Sony camera. Usually cameras are considered employees only. They're not bosses. So you'd need some sort of intermediate device. That's why a camera wallet, some people use what they call wallets. They're drives, nowadays solid-state drives, in a little handheld unit that you can use to archive photos. You'd stick the video card or the camera card into it, and it would copy them all off. Those are fairly expensive. But pro photographers sometimes use that, and that's another option, is to look for a photo wallet, not a analog one, but a digital photo wallet that has some storage that you can copy it over. That is, in fact, a boss. And then the camera can be what it wants to be, which is an employee. Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Actually, I think Magic Jack's going to sound better than that cell phone for sure, Doug. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Coming up, our photo guy, digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt. We have an assignment. He'll talk a little bit about that and answer some of your digital questions, maybe do some photographic myth busting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more to come right after this. She's not bringing a PC, and that was the issue. Mr. Marquardt, sir.
Hello, how are you?
I am well, how are you?
I am doing fine.
So, Sony, like a sport camera, extreme sports camera. I know, I guess they make a GoPro thing.
Is that like a 4K camera now?
Yeah, it probably is. She's bringing it on a trip, but she's not bringing a computer.
You can I would take as many cars as needed.
That's exactly what I said.
treat cars like film. That's what I do.
Yes.
That's what everyone should do.
I learned that from you. You'd bring 20 rolls of film, you'd bring 20 cards.
Exactly. And then next time, don't buy new cards, just bring the old ones.
Are you leaving
us? Don't format them until you need them.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you, Dad. Nice to meet you. I hope it wasn't too horrible. Too boring. No, not that bad. All right. See you back here. We lost Nirza, but Omar's coming back. I just bought another lens.
Okay.
I said I'd never buy another one, but I'm all excited about my Sony A7 R2.
Ooh, did it just arrive?
It hasn't come yet. It hasn't even been shipped yet. I got it from B&H and I didn't get in.
I know at least two people who are getting it from B&H like tomorrow.
I know people are getting it because they got in quicker than I did. I figure I'll get it soon. So I've been reading the reviews because these FE lenses, I have a couple and I'm going to mostly use my Leica. But I want one autofocus lens. So I got the 35 millimeter, which I think is a good
one. So you're getting lazy.
No, I am hopeful that they'll do a nice telephoto. They don't have any telephotos. They have a sort of telephoto zoom, and they have a macro. But I'm waiting for a good telephoto.
The choice of lenses is still a bit...
Still bad. Still bad.
Still a bit too...
But I am not bored, Amiyashi, of the... I am not bored of my lovely Leica. All my pictures on my trip were taken with a Leica. I only brought one lens, and I love it. I love it, but I want to have something a little wider. That was the and a little faster. This is an F1.4.
Ooh.
Oh.
Lots of light getting in there.
Yeah, because it was like churches. I wanted to be able to take pictures inside churches. Yeah. So I need a little wider.
Even though, I mean, the i7R, I mean, this camera can pretty much shoot in the complete darkness.
I know, it's amazing.
So you could use almost any lens on that and still get good quality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's amazing. That's just weird coming from the time of film SLRs and still being completely
this is almost
the world of F8, I don't know, somewhere in the middle to get like a good quality, not too much vignetting picture. And then all of a sudden we shoot all the lenses wide open because they look nicer or because they give you less bokeh, more bokeh, less depth of field, and everyone's kind of in love with that. And it's a weird time right now. But hey, I mean, it's wonderful.
It's exciting. It's expensive.
To get all this stuff and to be able to kind of put this on digital cameras. I mean, old lenses. I'm thinking of getting a shift adapter.
Yeah.
To architecture photography, but not for an existing. What I want to do is I want to put a medium format lens on my full frame SLR because the medium format lens has a bigger image circle and that
then
means
you get
to shift it around and get some architectural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still looking into what to get because, I can't decide.
What do you
and
want?
That's, by the way, something I want to briefly touch on, like making lenses do things that they're not meant to. To do.
Is that our topic? What do you want to talk about?
That's the topic. Pimp your lens.
Pimp your lens out. That photographic song tells us it's time for Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. He's at discoverthetopfloor.com, joins us most weekends to talk about digital photography. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo. I heard you just bought a new lens.
Shut up. Don't tell anybody. It's a secret.
Okay. Is there anyone
I bought a new camera is what I bought, and I thought, well, when you get a new camera, you have to have a welcoming gift for it. To welcome it into the family.
You know, there are actually, here's a bit of myth busting, okay? What do you do if you need a macro lens? Of course, you go buy one, right?
Yeah.
No, you don't have to. What do you need? What do you get if you want to have a wide angle lens? You buy one.
You
don't have to.
You don't have
to. There are ways around that. There are ways
don't
to
tell me that
your
now.
Existing lenses. No, there are ways to make your existing lenses do things that they were not designed to do.
Don't tell me that now.
Let's talk about macro first. If you have a 50 millimeter lens or a kit lens like an 18-55 on your DSLR, there are three different ways to turn that into a macro lens.
Wait a minute. Tell us what a macro is.
Okay, macro is one where you get these very close-up pictures of little bugs and flowers and things that fill the entire frame. So kind of a magnifying glass kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have one of these just plain run-of-the-mill lenses, get an extension ring. That's the first thing.
Oh.
An extension ring goes between the camera and your lens. So it increases the distance between the camera and the lens. It doesn't do anything but that. And that will turn your lens into a macro lens. You can get much closer. It reduces the minimum focus distance.
Okay.
So that's one thing. By the way, if you get
an extension
ring...
Will it reduce the quality?
No, it will reduce the distance, the minimum focus distance.
But it will
reduce the quality a little, but not too much, actually. So get one with contacts. Get one that keeps the contacts intact between your camera and the lens. So you still have autofocus. You still have like aperture, actuation, these kind of things.
I have one of those for a telephoto lens that doubles the length.
That's an extender. That's a different thing.
Okay.
What that does, it has lenses built in,
and glass,
that kind of changes things. An extension ring to turn a lens into a macro is just a ring. It's pretty much a distance ring. Yeah,
okay.
It's hollow.
Okay.
Second way to get your lens
cheap.
To be a macro. Yeah, pretty cheap,
relatively.
Actually. We're talking 30, 40 bucks maximum. So
they're
not expensive.
I do. You know what? Macro photography is one of those things that's really fun, really cool. Some people specialize in it.
Oh, yes.
For me, it's something I just like to be able to do from time to time. It's not something I want to take pictures of bugs all day.
And that's why I don't
flowers.
Want to buy a special lens
right,
for that.
Right,
exactly.
I like this. A little extension tube.
Okay, second thing.
Yes.
again, turning your lens into a macro, get a close-up lens. That's like a, it's like a magnifying glass that you put on the filter thread on the front of your lens.
Now that will degrade it a little bit.
Yes, it will, but again, not too much. A cheap one will, but there are more expensive ones, and you want to look for the word achromatic, A-C-H, achromatic, which means they are corrected for color fringing and things like that. And the quality is actually quite decent. I typically have one of those with me just in case I need to get a picture of something close up in a pinch.
You know what I found out the other day? I found out the other day that many lenses have horrific chromatic aberrations, but the camera knows it and adjusts it in software, and you never know. But if you looked at the original image, you'd look at it and go, ooh, that's not good.
Oh, so some lenses nowadays have horrible geometric problems.
Like barrel distortion.
They turn things much, a lot of barrel distortion, and then behind the scenes, the software will go, oh, yeah, I know about this. Let me take care of it. And you don't, you never get to see that. Yeah. Lots of computational stuff going on these days.
Yeah.
Okay. Third way.
Third way.
You can turn any lens into a macro lens, or most lenses into macro lenses, by taking them off the camera.
Yeah.
Turning them around so that the front of the lens faces the camera.
Oh, you're nuts. Now you're crazy. That's crazy talk.
A very old technique. And the
you have to hold it because it won't attach.
There is something called a reversal ring that you can buy, which has a filter thread on one side and a camera attachment thing on the other side.
And what is that going to do? It's going to make it like looking through the wrong end of a binoculars, right?
Exactly. So it turns that pretty wide-angle lens all of a sudden into a super macro lens. It works really well, apart from one problem.
What's
you
that?
Have the contacts are not going
so
through.
You have to manually
manually focus, usually using like the distance of the camera to focus.
Isn't that a bit more typical, though, with macro photography? You don't want to use autofocus in macro photography. You need to do
that. Oh, that depends on the lens. There are good macro lenses that do that.
Really?
With an extension tube, you can usually do that when it as long as it has the electric contacts in there. And then if you go really close, if you have a super, super, super macro, that's when you would typically use like a little rail system that you put the camera on. And then instead of focusing, you turn a little screw to move the camera back and forth like really fractions of millimeters.
By the way, don't try this with your point and shoot. You can't remove the lens from that. These are cameras that are designed to have removable lenses. You know,
true.
Okay, I'm just warning people. Not all cameras have interchangeable lenses you can
Leo,
remove.
I killed my camera.
I tried to take the lens off and flip it around. Don't do that. Unless you have a removable lens camera.
Okay, here's one more way to pimp out your camera.
Crazy.
And that is, when you take a picture of a Christmas tree, or you have a picture of someone with a Christmas tree in the background, lots of little point light sources, you get this bokeh, the blob-shaped lights in the background. Did you know that you can give them a shape, that you can actually shape them? Now, what you want to do is you want to, in front of your camera, in front of the lens, you want to hold a black disc that has a little shape cut out, maybe a little heart or a little star or something, and you shoot through that. Make that smaller than, I'd say, like half an inch in size, maybe. Hold it straight directly in front of the lens, shoot through that, and photograph out-of-focus point light sources, and they will take on that shape. So you can have like pictures of your sweetheart surrounded by little hearts.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
Lots of cute stuff you can do there.
So say that again. Take
a black piece of paper.
Yeah.
A little bit of a cardboard thing.
Yeah.
Cut out a little shape, like a little star, a little heart, little, I don't know, skull and crossbones. I don't know, whatever you want. Make that the size of maybe half an inch.
Okay.
And then hold that directly in front of the lens. So it covers up the lens. So you look straight through that little shape. And when you take pictures of point light sources this way, out of focus point light sources, like something in the background, a Christmas tree. So it's the wrong time of year for that. But you could have like little candles and things in a darker setting. Those point light sources, instead of turning into these roundish blobs that you usually get, they will turn into the shape that you are holding in front of the camera.
And lots of them.
Well, depends on the amount of the point light sources. That's if you have 20 point light sources, you'll have 20 little hearts.
That's just with one. That's crazy.
Just with one little piece of cardboard. It's a fun little project, and you can really get a little effect. You could put like a Twit logo there or something.
Yeah.
Have little out-of-focus Twit logos in the background.
Fun with optics, Mr. Christopher Marquardt. He is a great photographer, and you can see his photos and find out about his workshops and his podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, at discoverthetopfloor.com, and he joins us every week. Our assignment is to illustrate the word or concept. Is it sour?
It is sour, yes.
What does that mean to you? Take a picture. Could be with your smartphone. You don't have to have a fancy camera or a backwards lens or anything. And you can upload it to our Flickr group. It's the Tech Guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will say, oh, thank you. One picture a week. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to review those pictures and pick some winners. No prizes, just glory. Thank you, Chris.
All right. Talk to you again next week.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. How fun. Pimp out your lens. Can you do that last one with a point and shoot?
Yes, we'll work with that as well.
Any camera. It'll just...
Let me show you one more thing. Do you know the lens baby?
Yeah, I have a lens baby.
Do you know which one do you have? Do you have the one with a squeezy tube?
No, I have the one with the screws.
Okay, there's one with a squeezy tube that... let me just find that picture.
This is for tilt shift photography.
Yeah, we call it the poor man's tilt shift because it's doesn't give you exactly the same effect, but it lets you move the focus around and tilt the
it's a weird effect.
The focal plane a bit.
There it is. That's a squeezy tube. The spark.
That's a squeezy tube. Yeah, which is lots of fun to play with, especially when shooting video. But there was this guy who actually made himself one of these for a bigger camera. I used a medium format lens and instead of the squeezy tube, he cut open, you know these black toilet plungers?
Yeah.
The ones that have the same kind of squeezy tube thing, but bigger.
Use a new one. Don't use a used
one. Use a new one, yeah. And so that apparently worked quite well to use like a medium format lens glued into the front and a camera attachment glued into the back.
Wow.
And then you have this big, big lens baby. It's not a lens baby anymore then. It's a lens, I don't know.
Photographers toddler. Get easily bored. That's what's going on here. You understand. They're just bored. Let's see what we
effect,
can do with a plunger.
The effect is beautiful. Trust me.
These are lens babies are cheap. And they are kind of fun to play with. I haven't done that much with my lens baby, but this one's funny.
And if you look at that, if you shoot video with that, it's a very organic thing, actually. You pass your camera to anyone you like. People who've never held a camera, just show them, like, squeeze here, look through the viewfinder, and they'll go, oh. And within a second, they know how this thing works.
Oh, I get it. Oh.
I'm a fan of these things, yeah.
I'm ordering one right now.
They mix it up a bit.
Put it on my Leica lens. Oh, no, you don't use a lens with this. This is the lens. Right?
That is the lens, yeah. It's just a plain lens. It's a straight lens.
A7 mount.
Oh, you'll find an adapter for sure. That is completely, totally worth getting. That is completely worth getting. I'm not kidding. You will.
Well, I found the screw one kind of hard to use. Unfortunately, it's Canon or Nikon only.
No, get that one and
a converter, a $200 Metabones converter, and I'm ready.
No, get a cheap conversion ring. It doesn't need. You know, it doesn't need autofocus. It doesn't need anything. Right. It doesn't need electrics. It has a fixed aperture. So just. Play. That's a lens to play with. You will thank me. Trust me.
It's a very cool effect.
Positive. Yeah. Get the, what's it called? The Spark. Yeah.
Spark. $90.
That's nothing.
Crappy optics, but who cares?
For a lot of fun. For a lot of fun, that's nothing for having a ton of fun. Your pictures will be better. Not just by using this. I mean, not just while you use it, but even when you then go back to your other photography, you will have to learn something from this thing.
I actually still have my 5D Mark I. I could put it on that.
Or that. Give it a try.
All right. You win another lens for Leo.
This is one that the doctor recommends.
Russell, our IT guy, got his Mark II, A7R Mark II. I'm so jealous.
Okie dokie. Well, next week you'll probably tell me about it.
I'll get it soon. Thanks, Chris.
All right.
See ya. Bye. Can I mention Prosper? This is a great idea. Prosper is kind of Silicon Valley's answer to the bank loan or to going to your brother Louie or the loan shark Louie. If you need cash and you need it fast, you can get as much as $35,000 in as few as 5 days from Prosper.com. See, it's a lending marketplace, and not a bank. What happens is they bring people with money to lend together with people who need money to borrow. You'll get a low fixed rate loan with Prosper.com. It's very easy. If I can go there right now, Prosper.com/twit, fill out a simple form, and you'll get a quote right away, and it won't affect your credit score. It's a great online marketplace, whether you want to pay off high-rate credit cards, fix up the house, put it into your business. It is the way to borrow these days, thanks to the internet. Prosper's online marketplace is ready and waiting for you. Get your low rate right now at prosper.com/twit. Up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days and a $50 Visa gift card at prosper.com/twit. If you don't need money right now, take a look at your credit card interest rate, then get back to me. Prosper.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, standing up for your right to compute. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 8888-ASK-LEO. Bob in Austin, Texas. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you. I'm watching you live here on Twit.
I'm waving at you.
Yeah, I met you in Austin last October for the meetup, and you signed my old OS X Tiger book that you wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I have a question. I now have a 20-inch Core 2 Duo iMac that's running Mountain Lion. And I went on a couple of sites just the other day, and it said that my Safari was deprecated.
Deprecated? How dare they?
I know, and I went on some of the news groups, and they said their answer was, well, just upgrade to Yosemite or use Windows. And, of course, you know how news groups are. They're very mouthy.
Well, yeah, right. Hey, what are you talking about? Just use or Chrome.
Well, I do have Chrome. I do have Firefox on there. But I like the Safari app, and I was wondering, why does Mac tie their browser or their applications to the operating system? I thought Microsoft got in trouble with that a long time ago with IE.
Well, that was because they were bundling it. And by the way, that was a kind of a foolish prosecution on the part of the U.S. Department of Justice, accomplishing absolutely nothing, wasting years and millions of dollars. And it turned out that it really wasn't a big deal, that bundling the browser with the operating system made a lot of sense because that's what everybody does now. In fact, there is one operating system that's all browser, Google Chrome OS. So here's the I can't speak for Apple about why they are no longer supporting. Well, the issue, of course, is that version of Safari is so old it's unsafe. They want you to use a newer version. That's very common. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the newer versions require a new version of the operating system, and that's probably because it uses operating system services that aren't available in Mountain Lion.
Well, they were saying something on the news groups that it relies on WebKit.
That would be it.
Updating WebKit all the time.
Yeah, that would be it. So, yeah. I mean, it's tempting to say, oh, that's just a grab for money. That's just greedy because they want you to upgrade to the... Because you can't upgrade the operating system without upgrading the hardware. By the way, there's this big catch-22. I mean, with a lot of Apple stuff, you can't use an iPad 1 with all, you know, I mean, it just all goes crazy. In one respect, Apple is to be praised because they, unlike a lot of other companies, I'm looking at you, Microsoft, are willing to say to their users, no, look, you have to upgrade because we've got to move forward. And it's something that hurts Windows a little bit is this need Microsoft feels to make sure that everything ever made will work on the newest version of Windows. They've kind of given that up, by the way. They don't support Internet Explorer 6.
Yeah.
So the problem is that the software you use to go on the Internet is the software that is the front line of defense against bad guys. The bad guys get to your system not by knocking on your door and walking in your house, but by getting into your computer via the internet.
Well, my Core 2 Duo is a 2010 model. It will run Yosemite, and I guess it will run El Capitan. But I have so many specific Mountain Lion apps, like a utility called Onyx.
Yeah.
That is
you don't need Onyx.
That one.
You don't need Onyx. That's a system utility that's kind of made unnecessary by the later versions of the system.
Okay, because I'm used to having everything run. I run specific Linux on laptops. And
that's not Apple's fault. That's the third-party developers who haven't, updated their software, frankly.
Okay, I thought it was just a part of Apple that they didn't want to keep updating their web browser just, for the heck of it.
They did update their web browser. They updated it to WebKit, which is much more modern. By the way, WebKit is what everything else is based on. The only browser that's not based on WebKit, I think, is Microsoft's browser and Opera. But everybody else is using WebKit. So I think you want to do the upgrade, to be honest with you, for security reasons, if nothing else.
Well, should I wait for El Capitan since it's probably...
No. Apple, it's interesting. I think a lot of people who are used to a more stately pace of upgrades in the operating system because of Microsoft are a little shocked that Apple puts out a new version of OS X almost every year. But they give it away. They get a very high adoption rate. And really, I think a lot of the reason is not improvements in the user interface. I mean, come on, really. I think we've solved that. Everybody, any change to the user interface is going to be to the detriment of the user, not to the benefit of the user. But really, it's what's under the hood, and in particular, security.
So should I try to do a completely clean install?
No need. Just, I would go to, you don't even have to go to Yosemite, whatever the newest version that will work with a modern Safari. Although I think you could use Maverick, but there's no reason not to go to Yosemite. Just go to Yosemite. Then what other software besides Onyx doesn't work with Yosemite?
Well, I have my iPhoto 943.
Yeah, that's right. Bye-bye iPhoto.
Yeah.
You'll like photos better.
Google Photos, because I heard you talk about Google Photos.
Love Google Photos.
Yeah.
I think Opera is a WebKit. It's a fork of WebKit from Google called Blink. So everybody's gone to WebKit.
I'm just so used to the stability of Enterprise Linux that I have on all my other stuff that I mean...
Oh, you're a Linux guy. Ah!
Scientific Linux, which is based on Red Hat 6.6.
And you don't want to change that. You want to stay exactly where you are. That benefits from the fact that Linux really isn't an attack surface for most bad guys. There's just too few people using it.
Yeah, but I like the iMac that I got because I got it on the recommendation of a friend for the photos and the...
Yeah.
The Mac, and since I had that old G4 Tiger, it's in the closet now, but it was such a nice photo,
I would say Yosemite will run just as well, and you'll get the benefits of all the security updates, and there are many, many, many. The newer versions of OS X are massively safer than the older versions.
Okay.
Things like Gatekeeper, which prevents malware from running on your system.
Well, I disabled Gatekeeper on my Mountain Lion so I can install a few things.
Don't disable it. Just override it for stuff
That's what I did, override.
Keep it on, though.
You overrode it.
Yeah, keep it on because that's by itself. That single change is huge because malware has to eventually, for malware to work on any computer, Windows, Mac, doesn't matter, Linux, you have to run a program, and they either have to trick you into running a program or surreptitiously sneak into your system and run a program. And what Gatekeeper does is prevent that kind of rogue software from running.
Okay.
So they can't get on your system.
Well, I trust your advice more than the news groups. So.
Well, the news groups, it'll be a mixed bag.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely very smart people on there. I'm impressed. You're obviously, anybody who uses the news groups has been around.
Yeah, NNTP.
NNTP. The
OS 2 days. I ran OS 2 for 14 years.
News groups predate the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
They've been around longer.
Bulletin boards.
Yeah.
Yeah, you used to run one, correct?
I did. It wasn't a news group. It was a bulletin board, a FIDO bulletin board. But that was back in the 85, I think.
Yeah.
30 years ago. Oh, no.
Well, thanks for the advice, Leo. I'm watching you right now, and I'll still keep watching.
Yeah, I'd say upgrade. One of the reasons Apple gets such rapid upgrades is because it's free. Apple users are kind of used to this notion that every year you're going to get the new version. At this point, it really isn't about new features. I mean, they throw a few in, I guess, but it's really about kind of stabilizing the operating system. And they are slowly rewriting all the core pieces of it to be more secure. OS X, like Windows, was written and first used in an era where we just didn't have these continual attacks from hackers in the outside world, crackers trying to get into your system. So they didn't have to think about that stuff. Now it's almost been routinized. It's almost automatic now. It's not the bad guys who are looking for exploits kind of know exactly what to look for. There's just certain things you can, and it doesn't take them long to find it in almost any program, any operating system, any software, and to exploit it almost instantly. They've gotten really good at that, and I don't think anybody predicted this. And what we're finding is a lot of older software was written to very sloppily, very poor standards. And that sloppiness means it's vulnerable. So good idea to get the latest version. Operating systems are much better. Windows 10, Yosemite, Lollipop, iOS 8.4, all of them much more stable, reliable, and secure. So if you can upgrade, it's always a good idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. El Capitan. Yes, mon Capitan. Well, I'll give you an example, right? The El Capitan fixes that kind of scary flaw that let people root your Mac. So 10.5.5, right? I have not been using El Capitan because I decided after a bad experience with Yosemite that it's dumb of me to run beta software. And I think they've loosened up on the non-disclosure, but I've always been reluctant to doing it because of the non-disclosure agreement. Problem I had with Yosemite was something broke something, like USB or something. But that may have also been I was having a real problem with that Mac Pro. I scrapped the Mac Pro. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, smart watches, home theater, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also Skype us if you're outside those areas. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. That's where all the show notes are. So if I mention something, it'll be there, linked there. So you don't have to write it down. Just remember TechGuyLabs.com. And every answer and every question, every show, we've got it all. It's very easy, and there's no sign-up. It's free. I don't want your email or anything like that. Just go ahead and use it. TechGuyLabs.com. Heather has the weekend off because it's her birthday. Happy birthday, Heather Hammond. Kim Schaffer is in, answering the phones. 8888-ASK-LEO. I was talking the other day, and actually now I've been talking with a lot of people about this because my wife said, where's the new social network? For a long time, we had new, you know, it was MySpace, then it was Facebook, there was Friendster, there was Orkut, then there was Twitter. There were 100 different Twitter clones like Pounce and Jaiku and Plurk. And it's kind of all shaken out, hasn't it? There's Facebook, dominant. Boom. The social network. Actually, that's the name of the movie, wasn't it? And then there's Twitter, which is actually, in reality, a lot smaller. Twitter has around 300 million monthly active users. Facebook just hit 1.5 billion active users. Monthly, what? Wait a minute. Are there even that many people in the world? Yeah, but that's a good proportion of the people who are on the internet. 1.5 billion active users every month. So, boom, they're dominant. And then there's Twitter. I think we can now say officially Google Plus. Bye-bye. Nice knowing you. No, not, I'm not happy. I'm not gloating. I'm not thrilled. No, I loved Google Plus. I spent a lot of time setting up my circles. Maybe that was the problem. Engaging. It just didn't. It didn't fly. It's Facebook and Twitter. There isn't. So there's LO. You know? Do you know? Have you ever heard of LO? No, no one has. It started last year as a competitor to Facebook that doesn't steal your information. We're LO and we don't want to know anything about you. ELLO.co. That might be part of the problem. They left off the M. ELLO.co. It's nice. It's nice. There's nothing wrong with it, but Facebook, boom, dominant. I own it. Where? What? And then Facebook also has Instagram, which I love. 300 million users, monthly active users. That's a nice little. So it's a nice social network. Small one, little pictures. There's Pinterest. That's a social network, I guess. You know, that's doing quite well. But where's the new? Where's the next big thing? Are we done? See, it seems like we should never be done on the internet. The internet is all about the new, the next. But I think we're done. Part of it is something called the network effect. For a social network to work and to succeed, all your friends have to be there. And so once any social network kind of has all your friends, you're not going to move. I would love to stop using Facebook and use the next thing, but there is no next thing because my friends are all on Facebook. My family's on Facebook. My mom is on Facebook. And that's so everybody's happy and they're using it. And there's, you know, people, my daughter, 23-year-old daughter, uses Facebook to stay in touch with everybody she's ever met in her whole life because they're all on it. So Facebook is there. I guess they own it, whether you like it or not. LinkedIn is this for business. LinkedIn. But I think that's it. These have all been around for a while. So what's the next thing? Where's the next big growth area? Well, I think it's in messaging. I think Facebook wants to own this too. Don't you notice that you make fewer phone calls these days? I certainly do. And kids, you know, their phone calls are 5 seconds because most of the conversation is happening over messaging, isn't it? In the United States, it's text messaging now. It wasn't for a while, but text messaging has become very, very big. Now that we have phones, we can actually use keyboards. We don't have to type 1-1-1-7-7-1-2-2-2 to send a message. You can actually type it out. You can even speak it. Around the world, text messaging, SMS messaging like we use here in the States, can be very expensive. Carriers charge for it. And that's why WhatsApp, another Facebook company, notice Facebook seems to know what to buy. WhatsApp has, 800 million users? Huge. Because it uses data. It doesn't use SMS, so it's not as expensive. You know what the number one messaging app is, though, in the whole world? WeChat. Have you ever heard about that? WeChat. It's number one because it's the China. It's used in China. Billion users use WeChat. Have you ever heard of it? They have in China. Actually, half a billion users. People don't just use it for messaging. Great article in Wired magazine by David Pierce. He says, the heck with texting. Well, he says in a stronger form that I can't say on the radio. The heck with texting. It's time to pick a universal messaging app. And he talks about WeChat. He said in WeChat, it's not just messaging. People use it to talk to their friends, their colleagues, to strangers nearby and across the world. They use it to book train tickets, to get their laundry done, to order dinner, to play the lottery, to pick out clothes, to play video games. It's the remote control for their smart home. It's a mobile bank. It's a way to renew your visa in China. WeChat. People use WeChat just like Vine and Instagram to do public content. They're like YouTube stars. They're WeChat stars. David says you can, for all intents and purposes, live your entire life within WeChat. And we don't even know about it because, no. Here's the problem. And it's like, remember the old days of ICQ and AIM, the old chat, the old instant messaging programs? You had to be on the network that your friends used. So if your friends use WhatsApp, you can use WhatsApp. But they don't, do they? Maybe one guy does. And so you have to have a WhatsApp on your phone. Maybe one person uses Line or Wire or Textra. There's a million of these, but no one dominant one. You know who wants to be the one dominant one? Guess what? Facebook. Do you notice that maybe in the last 6 or 7 months, Facebook, the app on your phone, has told you, you know, life would be so much better if you would stop messaging within Facebook and start using our Facebook Messenger. Download the app now. And they got stickers. And guess what? Pretty soon they're going to have a payment system in the Facebook Messenger that will let you send money to people. And I think it's just a matter of time before you can get your laundry done, train tickets, pick out clothes, play video games. Facebook wants to own this one too. I tell you, I look forward to the day when we all use the same messaging app. We've talked about being a blue bubble or a green bubble. I am really tired because I use Android. And many of my friends and family members use iPhones. And I'm really tired of being a green bubble. They don't pay attention to the green bubbles. That means somebody outside the messages system. They pay attention to the blue bubble. I can't. Am I blue or am I green? I'm blue. No, I'm green. All I know is I'm an outcast. All right, I'm going to do it. From now on, my wife, I tried this, by the way. I said, Lisa, my wife, we're going to use Facebook Messenger from now on for all our messages. She said, no, I'll text you. 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you use for messaging? Wouldn't it be great if we all use the same app and we could do all those cool things? Give me a ring. Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're a green bubble. I only talk to blue bubbles. You're one of those green bubbles.
There's
Snapchat. Snapchat. That's a social network. So I left out a few.
Sure.
But there, it's not like there's been any nothing new. I mean, people have tried Path.
You know what I wish?
What do you wish, blue bubble?
I was just thinking of this yesterday.
Yeah?
I wish the app for messaging on the iPhone and iOS worked the same way as Messages did on the desktop, in that it integrated all these other services into it.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be cool?
You know who's really missing the boat on this is Google, because they got Hangouts.
Yeah.
And Hangouts, unlike Messages, is cross-platform. This is why Messages is, to me, a non-starter, Apple's Messages, because I can't use it on Android.
Right.
And I have to be a green bubble. I have to use text messaging. But Google Hangouts does work on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
It works everywhere. It has a desktop. But Google's just not paying attention. It's like they're busy doing self-driving cars or something.
Google Hangouts doesn't work on iPhone?
Yeah, it works fine on iPhone. That's what I'm saying. It's unlike Apple's solution. It's cross-platform. It works everywhere. You can make phone calls in it. It does a lot of stuff. You can't buy train tickets yet. But that's just, you know. Line's very cool. I like Line. I love all of them. All of them would be better than text messaging, right?
Yeah.
What do your friends use?
WhatsApp.
But you have friends outside the U.S., obviously.
Yeah. So WhatsApp with them, or GroupMe is another one.
GroupMe?
Yeah.
Facebook bought Beluga, which I liked, but that's what Messenger became.
Oh.
That was 5 years ago. I'm talking about old times. Long time ago. I know, Google Voice. I know. You could use it for VoIP. But see, this is the thing, is email has failed us. So messaging is like the thing that's going to replace email.
You know, a lot of time the default text messaging that you get on your phone.
That's what everybody uses in the U.S.
Yeah, but sometimes they're not very good.
It's not reliable. It's a crappy interface. Yeah. I agree. I think Google really has an opportunity, which they're dropping the ball. They're fumbling badly. But anyway, this was a good article. I liked this article. It really made me think.
Was this on Wired?
Yeah. Screw texting. It's time to pick a universal messaging app. But he doesn't really come up with an answer. But he poses this question. You know, why are we, you know, there's no solution. There's no central thing. And he, too, agrees, I think, that Google should do this. Facebook has a service called MoneyPenny that's going to act as a personalized virtual assistant in Messenger. They've already talked about payments in Messenger. I mean, I think Messenger, Facebook, I don't want Facebook to take it all, but they're about to. They're about to. And I think Google, it's Google. Pundits have argued forever there'll never be one true messaging app in the U.S. because the network effects are too hard to engineer. Well, let's engineer them right now. It doesn't so much matter what we pick, although Facebook Messenger is probably the best bet right now. Maybe it's Hangouts. Maybe Kick. Who cares? Maybe it's WeChat. What's far more important is the fact that we all finally choose. So just let me know which it is, and I'll make sure I don't uninstall it. I think Facebook's going to win. But I'd love Google to do it with Hangouts. I just think they're missing a bet. Multiple chat doesn't really solve the problem. Well, maybe it does. Like Trillion or Pigeon or... This is one time where I wish I could use my vast power as a radio talk show host to enforce that we could all use one messaging program. What should it be? Let's figure, Kim, let's just make it up. Let's just say, what should we all use?
WhatsApp.
What? I don't know. You know, I feel like WhatsApp's kind of fallen behind.
The Google chat's great.
You see, this is the problem. But what about Messenger? Facebook Messenger's pretty useful.
And I use WhatsApp for some people.
That's what you don't want to do.
Google chat for some people. Yeah. And Facebook Messenger for
that's
some
the
people.
Problem.
And then text for other people. So see? I use all of them as well.
That's the problem. I think Facebook apparently, though this is a really interesting rumor, has a new product called MoneyPenny. You know who MoneyPenny is? MoneyPenny. Hello, MoneyPenny. It was M's secretary in the James Bond movies. MoneyPenny is a personal assistant platform that Facebook, apparently, the rumors are, is going to integrate into Facebook Messenger. Okay, now wait a minute. So you can make payments. You can send money to your friends or pay your bills. You can chat. You can send stickers. They have lots of fun stickers, including the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And soon you'll be able to say to your Facebook Messenger, hey, would you pick up my dry cleaning, please? Now, how much would you pay? I think that'll be interesting. You better believe Mark Zuckerberg and the Facebook team understand what's at play here. That's why they spent more than $3 billion for WhatsApp. $3 billion. And I got to think that's where they're putting their bets now. Google's missing the boat on this one. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Let's go back to the phones. Bob's on the line from Albany, New York. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
Hello.
And I just wanted to, first-time caller, long-time fan, Leo.
Thank you. Welcome.
I recently upgraded a really old Dell computer to Windows 10 and had very similar experience to what I've heard you describe.
Which it didn't work, and then it did work, and
exactly.
Yeah, it was better to
drivers didn't work.
Yeah,
I did a clean install,
mm-hmm.
and it was flawlessly beautiful.
Yes.
And I've been following coverage of Windows 10. There are a lot of issues about it, privacy issues and so on. But I wanted to share with you and your listeners two features that blew me away. The simple one, its backup and recovery features.
Yes.
Which is excellent.
Yes. Some of this was in Windows 8, but I think Microsoft's yes. got it down.
Yep. It is as good as Apple's Time Capsule, mm-hmm. Time Machine backup.
Mm-hmm. But it comes with it.
And it comes with it. And you it's know, cheap. Yeah. And it's free. Yeah. You just hook up a drive and you're off. But here's the thing that is so excellent. I've used Windows since version 3. DOS. I use DOS. And this new version, Windows 10, has foreign language support like I have never seen in an operating system. It actually has profile-based foreign language support.
Oh, that's cool. So when you log in,
yes.
you could be in French and your girlfriend could be in English.
That's right. My wife is Chinese. I create a profile. She logs in. There's Mandarin Chinese tech support. All the menus are in simplified Chinese language.
That's sweet.
There's a keyboard support.
Wow.
There's even a Cortana woman and man who speak Chinese with a little bit of a Chinese accent.
Kidding. So Cortana works in Chinese as well.
Yes.
Nice.
And all sorts of features for that kind of language interpretation. She logs out. I log in English. And you can switch language with one click. The applications that this could have in classrooms just boggle my mind, where teachers are struggling with students who speak different languages.
It's always been said that Microsoft gets every other version of Windows right. And they did it again.
You're right.
They did it again. Yeah. I'm sure they're trying to get everyone right. But 7 was the best version of Windows. 8 was kind of horrible. 8.1 improved it somewhat. But 10, I feel like 10 is, I can safely say, and here we are only in week 2 of the Windows 10 era, but Windows 10 is the best version of Windows ever. I really like it a lot.
I agree with you, Leo. Lots to watch and learn. But Microsoft, this really reaffirmed kind of my faith in Microsoft. It's better than any Apple products in its foreign language support, and that's a really
right
big
on.
Achievement.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I think, and the upgrade, as you say, if you do it in the Microsoft prescribed way, is pretty painless. You don't have to. I would back up, but you don't. You know, you can do it and not have to back up, and it just works great. Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence. Thank you, Bob. And I didn't know about the fact that you could do different languages in different profiles. That's very cool. I got to correct myself. The chat room's reminding me. You know what? I blanked this out. Facebook bought WhatsApp for $22 billion. I said three. Three seems more reasonable. Three seems like a lot. They bought Instagram for one. $22 billion, that sounds like what it would cost to go to Mars and come back or something. I mean, that's crazy talk, crazy money. But yeah, that shows you how important this whole messaging thing is, isn't it? 8888-ASK-LEO. Monica is on the line from Diamond Bar, California. Hi, Monica.
Hi, good evening, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Monica. Welcome.
I remote from home occasionally and through a VPN system from work. However, I have two monitors at work, two monitors at home. However, the throughput is only showing up on one monitor.
Yeah.
And I've looked. They don't have the money for another license for Dameware. So I'm wondering, is there anything that I can do on my end to be able to utilize the two monitors at home?
So you want a dual display at home, but the VPN will only display on one monitor at a time.
Correct.
What software do you use for the VPN? Are you using Windows built-in software, or do you use a Cisco program or something like that?
Okay, I think from work it's Cisco probably.
But when you call in, because you want it to work at home. With two
right,
monitors.
I have Ultimate 7 on my computer at home.
And you don't have any special VPN software, you just use Windows for that. The reason I asked the question is if you're using RDS, the remote desktop software.
Yes, built, correct.
You are. All right, there's a command, /span, which tells RDS, use all the real estate. So there's a way to force your hookup to use both monitors.
And I won't need anything special from the VPN at work, correct?
I don't think so. Because it's a dual monitor system at work, right?
Right.
Yeah. So one thing you could do is modify. So you double-click an icon probably to get online.
Right.
You can modify that icon. If you look at the command line in the shortcut, it'll be RDS. You just add a /span to it. That's one way to do it. You probably can also do it in the settings, the remote desktop settings. Just say use two monitors.
I've done that, but it still only comes through as
interesting.
One.
Interesting. Actually, the command is not RDS. It's mstsc.exe/span. Thank you, chat room. Boy, I'm not sure if you've done it. Is there something? Let me ask the chat room, because they obviously have done this. Is there something that she needs to do at work to tell the setup at work to make sure that it sends both monitors to her home? Chat room might have a solution. If you have different size screens, Web4395 in our chat room says odd things can happen. There are both screens the same size?
They are.
As they say, you don't have to do anything. The Microsoft Terminal Services client, MTSC, should span both monitors. I'll tell you what, I'm going to keep an eye on the chat room on this. I'm not sure why it's not working for you. Dale Poco and others in our chat room say they do this and they get both monitors at home and at work.
Oh, I would be so thankful for that.
Yeah. You, of course, have to, in your display settings, make sure that you're saying that the monitors are spanned, not cloned, not mirrored. You're using Dameware at home?
No. The thing is, the company has Dameware, but they only have so many licenses, and they only use them for the IT department.
So you are using Microsoft's terminal services.
Right, I guess.
Yeah. MSTSC/span, that's what everybody's saying. I don't know any more than that, but I'll tell you what, I'll keep an eye on the chat room and either put it in the show notes. Our website is techguylabs.com. You can just go to your question in hour three.
And just to clarify, I would put that in on my end at home?
Yes.
Or would that have to be input?
At home.
At home. Have anything to do with doing on my office computer.
No, because your office computer, just to clarify, you have two screens at your office computer. What you'd like to do is use both screens at home just as you do at work.
Yes.
And you're using the Microsoft Terminal Services client at home to log into work.
Okay.
Yep. Is that all correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, one thing to do would be to make a desktop shortcut. This is what Dale does in our chat room. That has the proper command line. Are you ready? I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, I'll check the chat.
Because it's %window/system32/msts.exe/span. It's a little long. You can just right click on the desktop, create a shortcut, and paste this into the shortcut and see if that works.
Okay, I will.
All right. Hey,
thank you so much for the call,
and thanks as always to the chat room. Because they're so smart, they can figure all this stuff out. Let's see. The next call is Angelo in Rancho Cucamonga. Hi, Angelo.
How are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Good.
No, you're not. Because you got ripped off, it says here.
I feel like that, but I tell you one thing. I'm kind of embarrassed to bring this up because you have some of the smartest people in the world listening to your show every week, and
when it comes to technology, we're all dummies one place or another.
Well, I got myself in a jam, I think, and I'm not even knowing if I even know, but I wanted an application made for Android, and I don't know how to write code. I'd like to learn, but it's not what I'm doing right now every day. I'm
sure
in my career.
Yeah.
So I looked around. There's actually reviews for developers, and I picked one, and I paid them an awful lot of money, and all I got was a spiral booklet that is much like a blueprint.
He ripped you off. He didn't send you an app. He sent you documentation.
Right, but from the beginning, see, I didn't know how to do this. It was like buying a car for the first time.
Yeah.
Where the first time you buy one, you pay more, you don't get much. So anyway, they told me that they're going to, step one is, put it on paper, flesh it out.
That is step one. And then you approve it. You say, this is what I want it to look like. Yes, that's right. We sometimes call it a functional specification.
Well, that's what I got for the money I paid. And step two was going to be the code writing.
Oh,
they want more money
for that, eh?
It was insane how much they wanted. But maybe it's normal.
So, let me talk about this. I get calls from people all the time. I got the best idea for an app, but I don't know anything about writing software. So they say, well, I'm going to go find somebody to write this program. First of all, chances are really good that your idea isn't that good idea. And there's a lot more to getting an app successful than having a good idea. People hear $22 billion for WhatsApp. I can do that. That's just a messaging app. You're right. A lot of people could write WhatsApp. But it was the magic confluence of a bunch of stuff that made WhatsApp worth $22 billion. Having the idea by itself is pretty much worth nada. So you got to get a programmer. My friend Kevin Rose did that when he created Dig. He didn't know how to write code, so he went and he went online, found a guy up in Canada on Prince Edward Island, middle of nowhere, wrote the code, and next thing you know, he's on the cover of Business Week, $60 million man. So you can do that, but it's hard because you don't know what you're looking for. I think Kevin lucked out. He got a great programmer. We'll talk a little bit about hiring a programmer, and I'll tell you a little bit what an app costs so you have somewhere to... as reference, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So maybe the issue with our caller using terminal services was the license for her Windows. If she had Ultimate, that would work, but maybe Pro wouldn't. So that's one possibility. And, you know, you can just, I should have said this, you can quickly test it by doing Windows key R, that opens the run command, Windows key and R at the same time. And then typing that command that I gave you, mstsc.exe. Actually, you don't need the .exe. mstsc /span. And see how it works. Could be a license thing, huh? She said she had Ultimate. That's what I thought. All right, well, it's not that then. There's nothing more than Ultimate. Ultimate's the ultimate. Or is there? Yeah, kid might. Problem is, okay, here's the deal. I mean, if you are the kid who can write the great app, then you're worth something. Chances are you've got your own startup. You're not sitting. So one of the things that happens is you get somebody in Russia or India who has gone to computers, you know, computer scientists, learned a lot. Works as a contract programmer for hire. The fact that they sent you a good specification is good. The fact that they didn't tell you that the cost that you had paid was the total cost was bad. So it does sound like you might have been ripped off. Anyway, we'll talk more when we get back. Yeah. Yeah. What if you're the Winklevoss twins and you got a great idea for a social network, and you hire this freshman named Mark to write it for you, and Mark says, yeah, keeps putting you off, and then launches his own identical social network. Then what do? You invest in Bitcoin. Fiverr. There's lots of places. There's Fiverr is a good one with two R's. These are places where you can hire programmers. Elance is a good one. Stack Exchange. There are quite a few of these. The machine at work needs to be Ultimate as well. Is that true that the guys who wrote WhatsApp didn't actually code it? They got somebody to do it? What? Well, let's find out. WhatsApp story. Jan Koum, the exclusive story of how Jan Koum made $22 billion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. There's a long-standing tradition in technology. Long-standing, it's been going on for a few years, of thinking of something and having somebody else write it. I was just reading the story of Jan Koum, who was a immigrant from the Ukraine when he was a kid. His mother was a single mom. He was 16 when they moved to Mountain View. His dad didn't make it. Dad stayed in the Ukraine. His mother wanted Jan to have more opportunities, so she came to the U.S. for her son, for educational reasons. In fact, she stuffed the suitcases that they brought with them with pens and Soviet-issued notebooks so she wouldn't have to buy school supplies for the young Jan. She became a babysitter. Jan took up a number of jobs, including sweeping the floor of a grocery store. His mother got sick. She actually contracted cancer. He was kind of a troublemaker in school, but he'd also taught himself about computers. He bought manuals from a used bookstore, joined a hacker group called Woo Woo, which actually it was a pretty cool group. A lot of good people came out of there. Went to San Jose State, moonlighted at Ernst & Young as a security tester, got a job at Yahoo. His job was to inspect the company's advertising system, looking for bugs. He made friends with one of Yahoo's first employees. They kind of hit it off. He and this fella, Acton, created a messaging app called WhatsApp. He didn't write it. Acton did. They finally left, actually traveled around South America playing Ultimate Frisbee. In 2009, he bought an iPhone, and he realized that the App Store was where it was at. Actually met a guy named Alex Fishman, another guy from Russia, and they started talking about Kum's idea for an app that would use your phone number of your phone to find friends. You know, you'd find their number, and they'd find your number, and then you could message each other. They hired a developer from rentacoder.com. That's who wrote it. Igor Solomennikov from rentacoder.com. They didn't know how to program, but Igor apparently did, and they wrote a little thing called WhatsApp that they have now. They sold for $22 billion, and Jan Kum, who owned 45% of WhatsApp, is now worth somewhere up above $8 billion. Nice story. They didn't write it. In fact, you know, you ask me, if you'd called and said, so I got this idea for a messaging app back in 2009... I'm thinking of going to rentacoder.com and hiring somebody to write it. I would have laughed at you. I said, yeah, that ship has sailed. You'll never make any money at that. So it does happen. It can be very expensive. It can be very cheap. You can hire a kid who's just out of school. I mean, it's so hard, especially if you don't have the technical skills to vet a programmer. It's so hard to know if that guy's going to give you what you asked for. Did they tell you... We're talking to Angelo. Did they tell you that the money you paid up front would give you a program or just a specification?
It was just going to be a specification.
So how much did you pay? Go ahead, tell us.
I don't want to say. I'll tell you off the air. I'm embarrassed bringing this up.
Well, wait a minute. Now, okay, I have a quote sitting right in front of me for an app for our podcast network. $80,000. Was it under $80,000?
Oh, yeah. It was like the price of a new car, but it wasn't that.
Price of a new car is about right. I might still pay the $80,000, by the way. It's from a very highly respected app development team. Apps can be expensive. If you think about it, there's good reason. So it turns out that kid at Rent-A-Coder, you know, eventually people started to realize, wait a minute. Why am I writing apps for $5,000 that get sold for $22 billion? I want a piece of that action. So it's gotten much more expensive than it used to be. I feel like you didn't get ripped off if they told you it would cost this much for a specification. It sounds like they delivered. Does that specification look good? Is that a good app? If you had that as an app, would you use it?
No, well... I don't know. It's a combination of things, you know, like, you know, they weren't returning my calls, they weren't returning my emails.
And where are they?
They're in Orange County.
Huh, they're local.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another story. couple of Harvard rowers. They were twins. Good looking guys. Had this great idea. They said, we should make a network for Harvard students. It would be so cool because they're high value people, and they'd be friends with each other. It'd be so cool. And they hired this freshman named Mark to write it for him. And Mark kept putting them off. They wouldn't answer their calls, kind of like you. Wouldn't talk to them. And then, lo and behold, 3 weeks later, he releases Facebook. The Winklevi sued him. Remember, we don't know how much they got. I think they got a little bit. Some people mocked them, saying, you didn't invent Facebook. He did. After all, it's the guy who writes it that really does the invention. But it's very hard to hold on to something like this. And boy, when there's this much money involved, I think those guys could easily have said, hey, I like this idea. Let's do this ourselves, or who knows?
I tell you, we signed contracts that, you know, that they wouldn't do this.
Good.
You know, and, you know, even when I first talked to them with my idea, we signed stuff before I even opened my mouth.
Good. You learn from the social network.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a blueprint, and I'm you know, I feel like I should continue looking for a good person to...
Well, the blueprint is a big part of it, and I don't, you know, you pay 10, 20 grand for that. That's a lot, but that is a huge part of it. That's something maybe you could have done. But if it's a detailed specification, I think that that's worth something. We wrote that. We have that. And we still got quoted $80,000. So and, you know, it's really what the market will bear. And, I mean, I could go to some guy and get it quoted for probably for $5,000. But I don't know if it would be as good. I don't know. You know, this is a big company. This is what they do. And they have... they have overhead. They have expenses. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. You could start over from scratch. There are lots of places to find people. I don't know if Rent-A-Coder is still around. But there's Elance and there's Stack Exchange. Lots of people, lots of places coders for hire will hang out. Those guys kind of are in the driver's seat at this point, though, aren't they? You're going to have a pretty good lawyer. And... and yeah, you can still get, by the way, Rent-A-Coder, still there. That's actually a good, that's a good testament to Rent-A-Coder, right? We went to Rent-A-Coder. He wrote us something called WhatsApp. 8888-ASK-LEO. I wish I had a better answer. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I hear this a lot. I think the best answer is, you know, learn how to code. 8888. And then you're in charge. But I know so many people, including Jan Koum, worth $8 billion, didn't write a line of code. He just had an idea. Hey, I'm out of time. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you had a good time. I'll be back next week with lots more tech talk. Thanks to our Kim Schaffer, our phone ranger, Nathan Staten, our musical director. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.